Hello again, or should I say, hello friends. I'm Newsround 5 sports anchor and play-by-play voice of Belmont basketball, Steve Lehman, and welcome back to another edition of Lehman's Terms. As you may have guessed from the intro there, we have a very special guest today on this podcast. We'll chat with broadcasting legend and the voice of CBS Sports, Jim Nance. He joins us for a candid conversation about his life journey and getting into broadcasting, the thoughts on the sports that he loves the most, some of his great moments behind the mic. We get into his path from the University of Houston throughout his legendary broadcasting career, how he connected with former Belmont coach Rick Byrd, and how he's made a home here in Nashville. We'll get his thoughts on the NFL season from this fall, the future of professional golf and college athletics. A lot of changes in both right now. And his decision to hang it up, at least from a basketball perspective, after this spring's Final Four. The 2023 Final Four in Houston will be Jim Nance's last with CBS Sports in a basketball sense. What went behind that decision? And what's his focus going to be with football and golf in the future? Make sure to like and subscribe for future podcast notifications, because we've got an exciting list of guests lined up all winter long. We hope to provide you, the sports fan, with compelling conversation and a chance to go inside Belmont basketball, college basketball, and some of the newsmakers that make those entities so great. We hope to shed some light and let you see them in a little bit of a different light. Thanks again for tuning in. And now our conversation with the great Jim Nance of CBS Sports. Well, I would love to welcome to the program the great Jim Nance of CBS Sports. Jim, how you doing today?
You know, I'm doing great. I'm back in Nashville. I had a wonderful weekend in Tampa covering a football game, but there's no place like home. And we have found a great home in Music City, that's for sure.
Yeah, I want to talk to you a little bit about that coming up. But I was sitting there at my desk yesterday, like so many Sunday afternoons, getting ready for our show at News Channel 5 and listening to you and Tony call that game. Now it's Monday. I guess this is sort of like your Saturday this time of year. For those at home who don't really know the broadcaster schedule, can you take us through what a typical week is like this time of year for Jim Nance?
Well, you're absolutely right. This is Saturday. This is my weekend, Mondays and Tuesdays. But this week I've got some things that are going to put me on the road on Wednesday and Thursday. So there are no 2 weeks, Steve, that are exactly alike. Of course, I relish nothing more than being right here at home in Nashville. But it depends on the season as to how extensive my time is away from home. During the NFL, I actually get more Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays around here. The golf season, which amounts to about 18 tournaments a year, takes me on the road for longer stretches, because you have 2 days of coverage, Saturday and Sunday. And of course, at these major championships, you're even doing coverage on Thursday and Friday. So the golf tour takes you to some magnificent, jaw-dropping places, but also takes you away from home for a long time. All I know is I love to prepare. I love to read. And that's been, to me, something that's never changed. It's just the joy of being in the process of getting ready to call whatever the next event is. Today, Mondays, and a little bit on Tuesday, I try to stay away from the clips about the upcoming game and just focus on recovery. Now, I'm not an athlete. They don't have to tape me up, but there's a little bit of a mental fatigue that kicks in after a three-hour broadcast where you're trying to be lightning quick with all your calls and instantaneous describing what you're seeing to people. Trying to have the right words, the right phraseology, just on overdrive mentally. That adrenaline rush kind of comes back to you on the opposite way the next day. There's adrenaline adjustment, I guess you could say. So, yeah, I feel a little sluggish and flat on Mondays, but I enjoy it. You know, we usually go out to dinner Monday night, watch a little football Monday evening, and just blend back into my Nashville community.
You know, Jim, a lot of people feel sluggish on Monday morning, but most of them aren't calling the game in the NFL on Sunday afternoon. What did you make of that game yesterday? You had the last two Super Bowl champions, and obviously the NFL is the league of parity. What do you make of the league so far this year?
It's all upside down, Steve. I mean, you've got the old quarterbacks and the these successful franchises like Green Bay, the Rams, even with the Bucs winning yesterday, they're all off a little bit. And all of a sudden you've got former bottom feeders like the Jets are suddenly rising up and doing things. Seattle has recovered quickly under Geno Smith. No one saw that coming. So it's been a wacky, crazy year. Yesterday, though, it was hard to believe. I was watching these two legendary quarterbacks, Tom Brady being one of them, the all-time GOAT, and they just struggled to pick up first downs. And we had 14 punts in the game. And the punters, by the way, were magnificent, including a 74-yard punt. But that's not what people are watching football for. They're watching for touchdowns and exciting plays. We didn't have a whole great many of them until the last minute of the game. And all of a sudden, Tom Brady at 45 was able to dust off all of the near misses and heartbreaks that had come in the game up to that point and at the start of the season, and resurrect the Tom Brady of old, take him down the field and win it with a touchdown pass with 9 seconds to go. It was pretty amazing.
Now, I know you were flying back to town last night, but did you get a chance to watch the Titans?
I did.
What do you make of this team that really has had no offense other than Derrick Henry up to this point of the season? It has a great defense, but somehow sits here at 5-3 and on top of the division at this point.
Well, I got home in time to see the whole second half. And I thought it was going to take a monumental effort to win at Kansas City. I'm in Kansas City. It feels like every other week. I'll be there this week for the Chiefs. But that'll be my fourth Chief game of the year. But the fact that they led 17-9, and had they not allowed that one scramble first down by Mahomes, the Titans very well would have won the game. What did I see from the game? One thing I saw is that Malik Willis isn't ready yet. I think he could be very good. I attended with my son two preseason games, sat in the stands, and everybody was saying, hey, this kid's unbelievable. But, you know, if you got a trained eye, you could see that he's not quite ready to read defenses and know where to go with the football. I'm not trying to blame him. Kept him in the game. He didn't make a lot of mistakes, didn't turn the ball over. But if they had Tannehill, I think they would have probably won last night just because, you know, it would have been some semblance of a passing game. But my bottom line thought on them is that Mike Vrabel has done a remarkable job in his staff. I mean, to be 5-3 with all the things that have hit this team as far as injuries and the loss of A.J. Brown, and they'll win the division. I don't think there's any doubt they'll win the division. And maybe there's going to be something that's going to evolve with the passing attack as the season goes on. That's a hard-nosed football team. That's a tough team. And that would have been a spectacular win last night. Would have actually put them in a tie for the top seed in the AFC had they won the game, just like they were a year ago.
I tell you what, Vrabel impresses me. They've won a game and gotten to overtime against the Chiefs on the road the last 2 weeks with the two lowest completion totals in the entire NFL for the entire season. It is absolutely remarkable. Jim, you've got some great partners. I know you love them all, from Sir Nick and everybody you got on the golf side, and obviously Bill Raftery and the NCAA tournament. Tony Romo, though, was the guy you were with in Tampa yesterday. I've got a couple quick questions about him.
Sure. One,
is he as bad at math as he lets off on the broadcast?
Now, that's some really good inside stuff right there. I got to give you that. I didn't know where you're going with that, because he often tries to do some mouth math off the top of his head. He had one yesterday where he was trying to figure out what percent, what was the question? It came up to, the answer was 10%. 5,000 yards. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think part of it is just self-deprecating, but he is such a fun guy to be with. You can hear it. We have just a ball. I mean, it's an amazing partnership. This is year 6 for us together, and hopefully we're maybe a third of the way through this partnership. That's all. I love the guy. It's just, it makes football so much fun for the viewer, but trust me, it makes it so much fun for the play-by-play guy too.
Yeah, that moment yesterday, he was reciting the Bucks on 3rd-and-7 or longer for the season.
That's
it. And they were 5 of 50. And he couldn't quite do the math to figure out what that meant in terms of 100% and where they were. But you helped him out, so you got him through.
I'll leave the tip next time. If you can't do the math, then I promise it'll be better than 10%.
That was well done on your part on the back end as well.
Oh, thank you.
But I do have to ask, because I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting there. And again, I'm often preparing for our show at night, listening to you guys talk about a game. And he will predict something that's going to happen. It's become kind of a cult following of how good he's become at that. Is there a moment that stands out to you from your 6 years where he said something and you thought, huh? And then all of a sudden it happens right before your eyes?
It's uncanny. Let's be honest, it's uncanny. You know, a couple of weeks ago we had what I think is the most important game so far of this season. That was Buffalo at Kansas City. He actually predicted the score, the final score in the first quarter. I mean, wow. He said it's going to be like a 24-20 type game. It ended up being 24-20 Buffalo. Our first ever game for real, because we did 8 practice games in the summer of 2017. I saw all of this evolving. I knew the guy was going to be sensational. But our first ever real game was at Nissan Stadium. People don't realize that. We had the Raiders against the Titans to open up the season in 2017. And in that first half of that game, he made 12 play calls, and he was 12 for 12. And the verdict was already in, 2 quarters into 1 game of his career, and people loved him. I will give you one thing that happened. Let's see. That would have been that season, I guess. Maybe it was season 2. We had New England at Kansas City for the AFC Championship. And it ended up going to overtime, and Brady and the Patriots prevailed. It was a wild game. And late in that game, I dubbed him on one go pattern for Gronk that he foreshadowed. I dubbed him for the first time Romo Stradamus. And that name has stuck. I should have trademarked it, but that was the game to me of all games where people with such a big audience. I mean, you had like 30 million people watching that game, maybe more, maybe 50, I think, for an AFC Championship game. That's when I think that he took it to a whole new level. And it's remarkable. You know, I find this, by the way, Steve, when we have a quarterback that has years of experience, like Tom Brady, Tony is going to really look great to the audience, because Tom sees it just like Tony does. Mm-hmm. So when Tony tells you where the ball should go, well, Brady's seeing it also. Point is, the opposite end of that is if you got a young player, you know, rookie quarterback, and Tony tries
Malik to Willis. It.
Yeah, well, I'll take Willis. And Tony tries to foreshadow it, and then it doesn't go there. People say, Romo was wrong. No. The rookie quarterback was wrong. Tony knew exactly where that ball had to go. It's just the rookie's not up to speed on that yet. So you get a veteran quarterback, it really works hand in glove with what Tony's saying.
Well, I tell you what, you guys are great to listen to, insightful, but so much love and passion for the game and the sports, all the sports you cover. And so it's such a pleasure for us, the viewer, to watch.
Thank you for that.
About your love for the sports, Jim, but also Nashville. I know this is a place you loved. You moved your family here, I think, about a couple of years ago now. What went into the decision to call Nashville home?
Well, one thing was, first off, we were living in Pebble Beach, California, which is a dream. And I still have my house there. We'll probably get 2 months a year when it's 100 degrees here. We're going to be in Pebble. But I had a lot of people say, oh, you moved because of the taxes. No, I honestly didn't even think about the taxes. I thought about where I needed to be for career preservation. I needed somewhere more centrally located, because almost everything that I do on a week-to-week basis is in the Eastern time zone, the great majority of the time. A week ago, I was in Philadelphia. This week, I was in Tampa. Trying to get to Monterey, California, that regional airport from those cities, not easy. So it was driven by trying to be in the air less and at home more. Now, where do you want to go? Well, I had been through the years in Nashville a number of times, like I have been in every major city in this country. And I always loved the vibe and the people here. And we had some friends here, like the Snedekers, very good friends, and they loved it. And I wanted to be in the South again. All my family is from neighboring North Carolina, from Charlotte. My folks were from there. I was born there. Ton of family still there. I wanted something that had that kindness, that warmth, that genteel Southern hospitality. So it just added up in a lot of different ways that this is where we needed to be. And I got to tell you, we had high expectations, but they've been exceeded. I can tell you that.
And as you know, one of the kindest men you will meet around here is the great Rick Byrd, former Belmont basketball coach. How did that relationship start? Because I know you guys are really good friends.
Well, it actually started in the 2015 NCAA tournament. Belmont was playing in North Carolina. And the first round, they took on Virginia. And I met him at practice. And I instantly connected with him, a mutual love of golf. And he understood the business. His dad was a legendary sports writer from Knoxville. And I just thought he was one of the coolest guys I'd ever met. And watched his team play. They gave Virginia fits, by the way, that day. Yep. And Raft was just going crazy and all these backdoor cuts. And it was just brilliant basketball. And when I started looking at real estate, I said to our realtor, Beth Moltini, I said, do you happen to know Rick Byrd, the basketball coach from Belmont? She says, the Byrds are like one of our closest friends. I play with Cheryl because they're both exceptional tennis players.
We
play and compete in a lot of events, and we've known Rick forever. I said, well, please tell him. He may not remember me. Please tell him Jim Nance from CBS just thinks the world of him. Well, we ended up, of course, moving here and getting together with Rick shortly thereafter. And listen, that guy is the perfect embodiment of what integrity stands for, class and integrity. I think he's been such an ambassador, what he did all those years as a coach at Belmont, what he continues to do for Belmont in whatever you want to call it, semi-retirement. He's a gem. He's a hero to me. He's a model. He's just a model of what a life well-lived looks like.
He certainly is a gem, but he's also the ultimate competitor. Has he gotten you out on the links yet?
Oh, we played a bunch.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's straight by the rules, as you might expect, and which I like. You putt everything out. You're not going to hit a mulligan, but he's so fun, and he's got a very sporty game, and he beats me. So, listen, it's all worked out just fine. He plays a lot more golf than I do, but there's many more rounds to come. You know, he's nursing an injury now. It's going to keep him off the golf course for about a half a year. But I went to see him last week, and we communicated after the game last night. He texted and said he enjoyed the broadcast, but he's good people. They actually named an award at Belmont after Rick a couple of weeks ago.
That's right.
It's called the Rick Byrd Character Award, and they gave it to former Governor Haslam, actually Chrissy and Bill Haslam. And I got to stand up and deliver a testimonial about the man they named the award after in Coach Byrd. So that was a thrill.
Yeah, well, there's nothing more fitting than the Rick Byrd Character Award, because that man is absolutely full of it. Jim, I got to ask, this is going to be your final year in the NCAA tournament and the Final Four. What went into that decision? I mean, you got a lot of good years left in front of you in terms of calling games and calling events, for sure. What went into that decision to say that 2023 will be your last Final Four?
Well, there were a lot of reasons behind it. I feel really good about it, but I had to isolate it on one thing. It was that I just wanted that time back with my kids. Mm. I'm gone all the time. You know, plus I found out how good life is here in Nashville. I want some of that back. And I've been on, let's call it the golden hamster wheel for 37 years. One season ends, basketball. The next week, the Masters. The summer golf ends. The next week is week one of the NFL season. It never ends, and the variety is wonderful. I've been in charge of three primary sports at CBS for decades. It was time, A, someone else get a chance, and B, it was time for me to get back that month of March. You know, the clincher for me was, and I had told CBS this several years ago, that it was going to be Houston in 23. They said, you can do it as long as you want, but let's reevaluate in the fall of 22. And I knew it. I knew it really this past March. Our kids go to Innsworth, and their spring break was the 14th through the 20th, which of course coincided with the first week of the NCAA tournament. My little girl's birthday also happens to be on the 14th of March. And I was brokenhearted.
Yeah.
Not being with them for spring break. I came back and asked the administrators at Innsworth, is this just a one-off deal? Because when we were in California, spring break was always in April. They said, no, it's every year. It's between the second and third week of March. And I knew right then and there that I would do one more tournament. And I wanted that spring break more than I wanted the Final Four. I wanted the spring break with my family. And I wanted to be with my daughter on her birthday. And it's time. Ian Eagle's going to come in. And he's going to make it even better. He's a great play-by-play guy. I've had, and it's bordering on being greedy. I've done it for, this would be 32 years of calling the Final Four. No one else had ever called it more than six.
Yeah.
So I've seen it all. It's the right time. And I still get to continue on with a 40-week a year schedule with the NFL and anchoring the golf. So I've got a lot to do, but I get now some more time at home.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You are the voice of the NCAA basketball tournament in my mind. And that's my favorite tournament in all of sports. Yeah. Every single year. What are you going to look forward to in the last one, Jim? What's kind of the one thing you're going to pinch yourself and think about when you walk into the Final Four, maybe even the first round venue for the first time? And do you have any concern about the future of the tournament with some of these thoughts out there that there could be further expansion or changes to March Madness?
I'll start there. I don't like the expansion idea, but I don't get a vote in this. I think it's just right where it is, but I think I'm reading the tea leaves. I think it's going to be expanded. By the way, also not a huge fan of at least the way they're executing the NIL, name, image, and likeness. It's not governed. You know, who knows what anybody's really doing for the money? It's very easy, I would think, for someone that has a big donor system to be able to go buy yourself a championship down the road or even soon. So I'm not agreeable to that. I also don't like the transfer portal. I'm just not a huge fan, but again, I don't have a vote in that. I don't like the idea that you recruit a guy and basically every year you got to continue to recruit him. You see so much jumping around now. I think there were over 1,000 kids that were last year, Division I, were in the portal. And look what's happened. Jay Wright's retired. Coach K stepped down. Roy Williams, all the great coaches, they all stepped away. They never said they had anything to do with it, but I'm sure in some capacity it did. Having said all that, the month of March and the tournament just captures something about that month, the transition from winter to spring. People love the event. I've always been hopelessly in love with it. And when I get to Houston, which was my gateway city into the business, I went to the University of Houston. My entrance into radio and television was through the basketball program back in the Phi Slamma Jamma days at the U of H. Our team is preseason ranked number 3. Who knows? Can you imagine? I mean, you got to dream it to achieve it. I actually don't have anything to do with the results on the basketball court. We got a guy named Kelvin Sampson can take care of that with the best of them. He's awesome. But if Houston could win that national championship that last night, wow, that would mean a ton. Now, I'd have to play it down the middle, and I would. But that would be an amazing way to call the last basketball game.
That's the walk-off right there. If that happened, would you go back to giving out your tie?
You know what? I haven't done it since Houston 2016. I did it for years. It got completely misrepresented in today's media. It became a very big source of second-guessing and cynicism, like I was trying to create some sort of attention. Maybe I've got it wrong, but I didn't like the way it got attacked. It was a very quiet, supposed to be unseen gesture to the player that I thought had made the biggest impression on me. I tried to make it a senior every year who I thought exhibited the leadership skills and the effort to take his team to a championship. And I did it for years. And all those kids that I gave a tie to, there was a writer in one of the big paywall sports sites that tried to go back and make something negative out of it. And they went back and asked the Quinn Cooks and, you know, Peyton Sivas and some other guys through the years. And they all said they thought it was one of the greatest things that happened to win the championship. I didn't think it would be that big, but it was very sweet and kind. And then all of a sudden the narrative got hijacked and I just stopped doing it. It's too bad. But, you know, I will tell you one good thing, Steve, that came out of it is that the folks from Vineyard Vines, who now I had a relationship with for a long time, we started off of that a tie to sell called the Forget Me Not. It was an idea actually hatched by Melissa Miller, who's run my world as my chief of staff for over almost a quarter century now. Because we have an Alzheimer's center in Houston called the Nance National Alzheimer's Center. It's named after my dad, who fell victim to Alzheimer's in 2008. And thanks to the good folks at Vineyard Vines, we created a tie with this Forget Me Not pattern. And we've sold so many ties through the years, and it got expanded to all sorts of things, belts and scarves and handbags, et cetera, that we've actually, with the proceeds going to charity, to the Nance Center, we've actually raised hundreds of thousands of dollars as a result of some media people having a very not so nice motive to try to go out this whole tie giveaway and make it into something very snarky and not what it was meant to be. It was supposed to be private. But because it became public, it ended up raising a ton of money for our center in Houston. So in the end, I'm grateful.
Well, that's awesome. Some long-term good out of what was a terrific gesture, and, you know, leave it to some columnist somewhere to go try and screw it up and so turn a good deed into bad.
So true.
Your other big sport, and you talked about going to Houston, you played golf there, actually a teammate of Freddie Couples, I believe, down there at the time. Golf is another sport that's, I guess, had kind of a rocky 2022 with just a lot of different things about the structure and format. And Tiger and Rory going to have their Monday night golf league, which that reminds me of beer league softball, although I'm sure they're going to take it a lot more seriously than that. What do you think the future of that sport is, Jim?
It's good. It's really good. Golf is hot right now. And that's why the disruption with a competing tour has splintered a little bit of the love fest for the game, that being the LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. I feel confident someday this will sort itself out, but the game is hot. The game came out of COVID with so many people participating in golf. All of a sudden, this is something we could actually do. We can be outdoors. We can be social. We can yell across the fairway at one of our friends. And it's just the game's on fire. And I'm happy to see that. I thought that 22 was a year that, you know, we saw some great play. And you know, Scottie Scheffler winning the Masters, Justin Thomas, who got married this week down at Troubadour on Saturday, won the PGA Championship. And, you know, it was just, it was a very exciting year. The other two majors as well. And that's a big part of my life. Like you said, it's we're going to actually have three extra events coming up this year with the FedEx Cup playoffs coming to CBS. And it'd be fun, wouldn't it, one day to have a PGA Tour event in Nashville?
Oh, wouldn't it?
I mean, with what Brandt's
done. Courses around here.
We got so many great courses, and we got a great ambassador in Brandt Snedeker, who's brought the Korn Ferry Tour here. And he and Mandy have done fabulous things for our community. And Nashville's such a hot market. There's going to be big sporting events coming here. You know, our new stadium, our new domed arena, we'll see Final Fours. We'll see a Super Bowl. And maybe we'll even see a PGA Tour event down the road. But Nashville is, it's on fire, but it's not going to flame out. This is here to stay. This is a great place to be.
I wanted to ask you about the possibility of the new stadium. I mean, if Nashville gets it, a Super Bowl, Final Four, all those things, they're slam dunks, right?
Well, the one thing is that the early mock-up, and I've seen the rendering, it's beautiful, for the stadium is 60,000 seats. They will have to figure out another 15,000 seats to put in there for that one game. I can't imagine a Super Bowl being only at 60. And by the way, they can figure out a way to, as they did in Dallas, the year that the AT&T Stadium hosted the Super Bowl between Pittsburgh and Green Bay. But I think that's a slam dunk. You know, what all of these leagues have figured out is that when you have an event of that scope, let's take the Final Four, it's not just about the game. It's about the experience in that host city. And what could be a better experience than people staying downtown and walking around to all the great restaurants? We have the hotels now to support it, and be able to walk to the Final Four or to walk to the arena for the Super Bowl. And we are, as someone who is called, again, my 37th Final Four is coming up. I broadcast 8 Super Bowls. This is going to be the place. We have like the best host site ever just waiting to happen. It's going to be just fantastic.
Well, we've seen it before with All-Star games and the Stanley Cup final and the NFL draft. It seems like Nashville always sets the bar at the next level. And the good news on some of those big events, I talked to people at the NFL and they said it'll work. The stadium's being built with the Super Bowl in mind and going through them. So whether they increase capacity or they're fine with 60, I'm pretty confident that it's coming at some point down the road.
Well, I've got one I'm going to share that I've never even said to anyone, but we have the Super Bowl every third year, or we did, sharing it with Fox, NBC, and my CBS. We rotate. This is a Fox year. Next year, it's our year, February of 24 in Las Vegas. So we actually, because of the new TV contract, there's now going to be a 4-year rotation after we get done in 24. Because ABC/ESPN is going to get the game. So now it'll be, let's call it Disney, CBS, Fox, and NBC after 24. Our next time up for CBS will be 28. I'll still be doing the NFL with Tony and beyond at that point. If this dome stadium is going to be ready for 26, that means the Super Bowl in 27 could be in play. But what normally happens is they buy a little grace period, right, just in case. So if I had to predict right now, I'm giving you a scoop, I would say that February of 28, Nashville would have the Super Bowl, and that would be on a CBS year. That would be, for me personally, that would be one of the great thrills of my career.
You're going to get the walk-off Final Four in Houston and then perhaps a Super Bowl in your home city. Wouldn't that be great?
I'll be home. I'm whatever, 6-7 miles from the stadium. I'm ready to host the greatest parties you ever saw.
That's awesome. Jim, I got a few questions for you, kind of rapid fire, if we will, sure, before we get done. Talking about venues like the Super Bowl or the Final Four, what's your favorite event to cover? And I hate this question when people ask me as a sports guy, like, what's your favorite sport? It's like picking between your children. I understand. Totally. But do you have a favorite event, maybe in each sport, that you cover?
Well, in overall, I think everyone knows that the Masters is something that's very personal and runs deep in my heart. So it's not a tradition unlike any other for no reason at all. It's it is for me the childhood dream come true. So I'll leave it at that. I do love all of these three sports, college hoops, the NFL, and golf the same. But the Masters to me is why I'm in this business. And that will be the last event I'll ever do, whatever year that is down the road.
And I know Augusta National, piggybacking off that answer, would be your favorite venue in general.
But yeah, I mean, it is. I've got a co-favorite actually for that.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. And it's a tour event that takes place at Pebble Beach, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. That week, it's a remarkable week. And we do host a lot of folks. The world of golf comes there, a lot of the players, media, celebrities, et cetera, et cetera. I've always tried to have parties at the house. We're a couple hundred yards away from the 18th green. I get to walk to work. I walk down the hill and finish the broadcast, and I'll walk back home. It's something very special about being able to do that. So Pebble Beach has always been to me heaven on earth. It's my favorite slice of heaven on earth. And Augusta, it's my favorite event, but Augusta and Pebble Beach are my two favorite places to broadcast from.
If we took it out of golf, Do you have a favorite stadium or arena somewhere?
Yeah, I would say in football, this new SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles is off the charts great. I've just loved being there. It's so loud at Arrowhead. There's a great energy because they're good, obviously. And that stadium has set the record for the decibel level. But Green Bay really touches my heart a lot. Lambeau Field. Yeah. It's just all the tradition, and people are just so darn nice. You're making your way out of the stadium and people are yelling over at you, hello friends, thanks for coming. They're just so kind. That actually means something to me. Now, there are some stadiums, I won't disparage them here, but there's some up in the Northeast. I'll give you a geographic area that you walk out of the building and they're swearing at you, and they didn't even watch the broadcast, or they're throwing snowballs at you during the December, January games, and you're ducking for cover. It's a different vibe. So I'll take Green Bay.
Who throws snowballs at Jim Nantz? I don't know, but I agree with you on Green Bay. Excited to be up there in a couple of weeks with the Titans. It's a special place. There's so much history in that building for sure. Now, Jim, the last three questions here, I try to ask a variation to everybody who comes on the podcast. So the first one is, if you weren't doing what you're doing, if you weren't the lead voice for CBS Sports, what would you be doing?
This was all I ever dreamt of since I was 11 years old. What else has piqued my interest through the years? Coaching would be fun. Although I've been around enough people that know the X's and O's and a golf swing, for example. But you know, if you saw me play, you'd say you're not qualified to teach anyone. So that could be limiting. I've always thought that the political world would be fun. You know, again, just trying to serve, to help other people. And I'm not one of these polarizing people. I think I could, if I was ever in that realm, I'd be trying to be a uniter. Let's just put it that way. I'd be trying to bring everybody together. And a golf course architect to me would be a heck of a thing to do, to shape the earth and have that challenge of sculpting and molding and figuring out drainage and, you know, how to make something beautiful and lasting and leave it behind that people get to enjoy, you know, taking that earth as your canvas and trying to make something of it.
Well, I tell you what, Jim, I hope you're in the broadcast booth forever, but I think there's some people out there that could get behind a Nantz in 24 or 28 or
no,
whatever campaign.
I'm giving this up. Run. Thank you, though. Thank you.
Yeah. Second question is, who or what is your biggest inspiration? What drives you to have the success that you've had?
Well, I have faith, first off, and my faith starts my day with many prayers of gratitude for things that I have in my life, and especially the people that are in my life, and that's central. My parents, it's as simple as that. And now my kids. So I'm on both sides of that. All I ever wanted to do was make my parents proud. That was all that's ever driven me. And I lost my dad in 08. I lost my mom 1 month ago, 5 weeks ago today, actually, at just about this very hour. And I'm definitely not over it. And I'm not sure if I ever will be. I lost a big anchor in my life. And it's very strange getting adjusted to life without having one of your parents around. But now I'm trying to take that into not only making my parents proud, but to make my children proud. I have three beautiful kids. That's everything for me. So it's all family on both sides of it. My parents, my kids, just want to make them proud. That's what inspires me. Nothing more than that. Try to do the right things for them.
Faith and family is a great foundation for sure. And certainly our condolences with you, Jim, and your family.
Thank you.
Prayers for this time. I know that's incredibly difficult. The last one, we'll try to lighten things up as we go out here. Guilty pleasure. And that could be anything. You know, you get done with the Final Four on that Monday night. Well, if Raftery's with you, I know what you're doing. But aside from that, You get done with the Masters on Sunday night, whatever. You sit back after a job well done, or maybe you're at Pebble in the summer and looking out over that vista. Is it a TV show? Is it a great bottle of wine? Is it just good what do you do in that moment to just kind of sit back and enjoy it all?
Well, I always have this dream about being on vacation somewhere, because you travel a lot, you work hard, you prepare hard. By the way, it's not manual labor, so nobody needs to feel sorry for me. I get a lot of luxuries that come with this, the way that we travel and where we stay, et cetera, et cetera. But the guilty pleasure, and I'm not even sure it's being guilty, is just thinking about being somewhere tropical or even in a winter mountain resort and just being isolated and surrounded by my family. That's probably not a guilty pleasure. Now, when I'm around Nashville here, my guilty pleasure usually gets back to food, to be honest, Steve. I mean, it's a constant battle because I love to eat. So whether it's, I just wish I could eat more, because I have a very hefty appetite and I have to control it. So like I can never get full enough. I just wish I could go to Arnold's and go through the cafeteria line and have a little bit of everything and then go back and do it all over again. If you ever had their, they always have their roast beef carved at the end, but their fried chicken, their fried shrimp,
catfish,
their collard greens, their okra, you know, whatever. I mean, I can't ever get enough. Banana pudding, places like Brick Tops, Sam's Place out near Bellmead. Best chicken tenders I've ever seen in my life. I could eat 10 of them. And just always trying to like hold back this monster inside of me that wants to just eat everything on the menu. So guilty pleasure, sometimes it's just saying the heck with it. Let's go blow it out tonight and have a really big meal. I'll worry about it tomorrow.
I tell you what, Arnold's meat and three. That's something you're not going to find. That's something you're not going to find out there in Torrey Pines.
No. I'm good for maybe twice a month going through the line and getting my meat and three. And sometimes it's meat and four. It was last week anyway.
Yeah. Well, Jim, this has been an absolute pleasure for me. Great to finally meet you.
Thanks, Steve.
Welcome to Nashville.
Likewise.
A couple of years late. And thanks so much for the
time. I see you, and I'm really proud to know you, and I look forward to getting to know you even better. We're just getting settled in. Been here a year and a half, and supply issues being what they are, our furniture arrives tomorrow for the first time in 18 months. I'm actually going to be able to live like we're supposed to live with our own sofas and beds and everything out. We've rented everything up until tomorrow. So I'm going to even feel more ensconced in the Nashville community this week. I'm excited about that.
Well, I love it. Jim, best wishes. Thank you.
All the best. Thank you, Steve.